take me far away. So keep them coming, please let me escape. Take me somewhere I've never been.
Hello, welcome to the second season of the Literature Out Loud series produced by the International Center for Writing and Translation with the support of Illuminations at the University of California, Irvine. I'm Carrie Noland, Director of the International Center for Writing and Translation. Literature Out Loud was directed by Sarah Rodriguez, sound engineered by JJ Margolis, with music by Frankie Beach. On this episode, you will hear an excerpt of a scene near the end of Philoctetes by Sophocles, translated by Carl Phillips and read by Abel Garcia as Philoctetes, Foxworth as Neoptolemus, and Sophia Metcalf as Heracles. But first, you will hear an introduction by Professor Jane Newman. Enjoy.
Greetings, everyone. My name is Jane Newman. I am a professor of comparative literature at UC Irvine, and this is an introduction to the selections you are about to hear from the ancient Greek tragedy Philoctetes by the Athenian playwright Sophocles, in a translation by Carl Phillips. You may have heard of Sophocles before. In addition to the Philoctetes play, he wrote the famous tragedy Antigone, about a young woman who refuses to obey the orders of her uncle Creon, who was also the ruler of Thebes, to not bury her brother after he is killed in a battle with his brother, Eteocles, over who was to occupy the throne of the city. I mention Sophocles' Antigone play here, both because you may have heard of it, or even read it, but also because the Philoctetes play differs from it, and from all other ancient Greek or Attic tragedy as well, in one important respect, namely that it, the Philoctetes play, has only male characters. This will be an important point that I will want to tell you a bit more about before you listen to the excerpts. Sophocles' Philoctetes play was written and performed in the ancient Greek city of Athens in 409 BCE. This was at the end of Sophocles' very long life. He was almost 90 when he wrote it. It was also at the end of almost a century of war. First, the Persian Wars between the Greek city-states and the Persian Empire in the first half of the 5th century, and then beginning in the middle of the 5th century, the so-called Peloponnesian War between Athens and its allies and the other Greek city-states. Every male citizen of the city had to be part of the Athenian military. The entire city had thus been on war footing for nearly 100 years. Sophocles came from a wealthy family and served in a number of important political positions in the Athenian polis or city. He was also a general, and thus well aware of the challenges that winning and losing in war presented. All of this is important to know, because the Philoctetes play is about warriors or fighters. Its plot, in fact, revolves around figuring out the best way to get one very important warrior, namely the title figure Philoctetes, who was a mythical figure, to come fight with the Greeks against the Trojans in what is now known as the Trojan War. The Trojan War was a very long war. It lasted 10 years. While historians are not actually sure if the Trojan War ever really occurred, it was the central event at the heart of the great Greek poet Homer's epic, the Iliad. And every Greek member of the audience of Sophocles' play knew the story. And they also knew that the Greeks had won against the Trojans. This detail will be important to remember. In any case, when the audience in Athens watched the Philoctetes play about events associated with the very long Trojan War, it's difficult to imagine that they would not have thought about what the on-stage action of the play might have had to do with their lives, lives likewise impacted by a war that had lasted a very long time. One more important fact. In 413 BCE, and thus 4 years before Sophocles' play was produced, the Athenian navy had lost a major naval battle in Syracuse, Sicily, an island off the bottom of the boot of Italy. An entire generation of young naval fighters had perished. This defeat was a major loss for Athens and set the city up for losing the Peloponnesian War a few years after the play was produced. As I go on now to tell you the story of Sophocles Philoctetes' play, keep this naval battle and the defeat in mind. There are three main characters in Sophocles Philoctetes' play, all male, as I've said. The Greek general Odysseus, you may know him as Ulysses, the Greek warrior Philoctetes, whose major weapon was the bow, and the young Greek apprentice soldier Neoptolemus. The backstory is that the Greek army, 10 years earlier and on its way to fight the Trojan War, had abandoned Philoctetes on the deserted island of Lemnos because of a wound that he had received on his foot. The wound had begun to fester and smell bad, so his fellow Greeks had not wanted to have him on board anymore. Now, at the end of the very protracted Trojan War, there had been a prophecy that the Greeks could not win the war without Philoctetes' bow. So Odysseus and Neoptolemus are sent to Lemnos to try to get the bow, and Philoctetes, but most importantly the bow, to come to Troy to finally win this endless war. Philoctetes was obviously not inclined to help out, to come with them back to Troy, that is, since it was precisely his compatriots, the Greeks, who had abandoned him on Lemnos all those years back. Why should he now do them the favor of returning with Odysseus and Neoptolemus to help them, that is, the Greeks, win their war? Odysseus' approach to the task is to do anything it takes to get Philoctetes to come along, lie, threaten him, simply steal the bow, and abandon Philoctetes for a second time. And he, that is Odysseus, encourages the young Neoptolemus, whose name in Greek means the new warrior, to follow suit, to be both duplicitous and aggressive to the end of supporting the Greek war effort. Philoctetes, however, pleads with Neoptolemus to become a real, rather than a false, friend to him, to guard the bow with his life when Philoctetes hands it over to him to keep when he is in the midst of a painful attack due to the wound, and to pledge not to leave him alone on Lemnos, all of which Neoptolemus agrees to. The plot of the play thus unfolds as a series of scenes, in which the young male warrior Neoptolemus is torn back and forth between two courses of action and, in effect, two moral positions. Does he engage in questionable behavior vis-a-vis the suffering Philoctetes for purely political and military ends, trying to trick him to give him the bow so that he and Odysseus can return to Troy with it to defeat their enemies? Or does he follow his moral compass, so to speak, and be a friend to Philoctetes? And having strong friendship loyalty was a major part of the socio-ethical code for Athenian men, and thus make good on his promise not to abandon him, indeed to help him to get home rather than assisting the Greeks in their foreign war. The play is thus as much about the coming of age of the young male apprentice warrior Neoptolemus as it is about the actual plot of securing access to Philoctetes and the bow. And one, well, at least I, might be led to think that those members of the original audience for Sophocles' play in Athens in 409 BCE, who belonged to the rising military class and had watched their generational comrades die in the service of the Athenian military for many years, and most recently been slaughtered in the course of that naval battle at Syracuse, might have been just as disinclined as Philoctetes to join the war effort, and in fact inclined to follow Neoptolemus when he sided with Philoctetes, and against Odysseus, of course, in recognizing the warrior's pain and staying a loyal friend to him, which of course would amount to not allowing himself to become a ruthless cog in the wheel of the Greek army and state. Such a decision would of course not bode well for the future of Athens' military in 409 BCE. It's interesting that Sophocles, the former general, wrote a play that left open the possibility for the audience to sympathize with what was, in effect, an anti-war stance. The two scenes you will now hear are among the most interesting in the play. The longer one is the scene when Philoctetes suffers an attack of pain due to his wound and asks Neoptolemus to hold the bow and keep it safe, and also asks him to swear not to leave him alone on Lemnos, to which pledge Neoptolemus again agrees. This scene is unusual for two reasons. First, for its length, and for the fact that it shows a character suffering. This seldom happens in Greek tragedy. It's worth thinking about why Sophocles might have introduced this scene into his play. Philoctetes' onstage suffering clearly persuades Neoptolemus to side with him in what is, again, and in the end, almost anti-war stance. That is, Neoptolemus pledges to stand with Philoctetes, who is resolute about not wanting to help the Greeks out. would the audience at Athens in 409 BCE likewise have been persuaded by this very long scene that Philoctetes had been wronged, that enough men had died, and that the war effort was not worth supporting? Again, this would have been a potentially very dicey position at this point in the Peloponnesian War. The shorter scene is the final scene in the play. The plot has come to a standstill. Neoptolemus and Philoctetes have decided to head home and to thus leave the Greeks at Troy in the lurch. But we and the original audience in Athens know anew that the Greeks in the end win the war, and the prophecy had said this would not be possible without Philoctetes' bow. How are he and the bow to be persuaded to join the Greeks? Sophocles solves this impasse by introducing the god Heracles, also known as Hercules, into the story. Heracles is a special god for Philoctetes for several reasons. In fact, Philoctetes' bow originally belonged to him, and so he was a good choice as a god for Sophocles to have made. This plot device is known as the Deus Ex Machina, a god from a machine, which readers and storytellers resort to when there's a problem in the plot that only a miracle can solve. Here, the god Heracles miraculously appears and orders Philoctetes and Neoptolemus to go to Troy and assist the Greeks, to which they agree. They have to. He's an immortal god, after all, and they're merely humans. He also promises Philoctetes that his wound will be cured there. Is Sophocles suggesting here that only a miracle will make it possible for the Athenians to recover from the defeat at Syracuse and win the Peloponnesian War? It's worth thinking about. But listen particularly carefully to the one condition that Heracles sets for the two warriors. He says that they must respect what is sacred to the gods when they conquer the land of Troy. What we and the original Athenian audience know anew, however, is that Neoptolemus in particular, the young rising warrior, actually does nothing of the kind, but rather ruthlessly slaughters the king of Troy, Priam, on the altar to the leader of the god Zeus, even as Priam pleads for his life. Is Sophocles suggesting here that even a warrior with the best of intentions, like Neoptolemus, will get caught up in the bloody immediacies of war and fail to keep his word? Is there any way for a war to be conducted justly so that it does not ruin both your enemy and yourself? Sophocles' Philoctetes play has been produced many, many times since its original staging in Athens in 409 BCE. This isn't surprising, since the questions that it poses about how best to win a war and what kinds of people are involved in doing so confront us every time military hostilities begin. I hope these readings give you a sense of the urgency of these questions, both for the Athenians when the play was first produced, and of course, for us today as well.
You tell me stories, they take me far away. So keep them calm and please let me escape. Take me somewhere I've never been. Show me something new, I insist.
What is it?
Nothing terrible. Come.
It isn't the pain of your sickness coming upon you, is it?
Not at all. On the contrary, I feel like I'm rallying. Just now... Gods! What?
Why do you call upon the gods and groan like that?
So that they'll come to us as kind protectors.
What are you suffering from? Won't you speak? You seem to be in trouble.
I'm all but dying, child. I can't hide my agony from you. It goes through. It's piercing straight through me, and I am miserable, half dead. I'm being devoured. Oh, by the gods themselves, if you have a sword handy, cut my foot off as quickly as possible. Cut it off. Never mind my life. Do it!
What is it now? What causes you to raise such shouts and groans?
But you know already.
What?
You know.
What is wrong with you? I don't know.
How can you not know?
The burden of the disease must indeed be fearsome.
Fearsome. Untellable. But have mercy on me.
What shall I do?
Don't be afraid, and don't betray me. The disease, its attacks arrive at various times when they've had their fill, I suppose, wandering elsewhere.
You are wretched indeed. Clearly wretched in all your suffering. Would you like me to hold you, to hold you close?
Not at all. No. But take the bow you asked me for just now. And until the present pain of the disease eases off, guard it. Protect it. For sleep overtakes me whenever this pain would leave. It cannot leave before then. So you must let me sleep in peace. And if those people show up in the meantime, I beg you, do not give the bow to anyone, willingly or unwillingly, lest you end up killing yourself and me, your suppliant.
Don't worry. It'll be given to none but you and me. Give it to me, and here's to luck.
Here, take it. But offer a prayer to avert the gods' envy, so the bow won't destroy you as it did me and the one who owned it before me.
Dear gods, let these things be granted us, and that our voyage may be swift and favorable to whether the god deems just and as the mission itself dictates.
Child, I fear your prayers go unfulfilled, for even now the bloody wound is dripping. The blood oozes from somewhere deep, and I half predict some new development. Ah! My foot. What agonies you cause me! The pain, it creeps forward, it's coming nearer. Ah! 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 You understand? Don't run away! Ah! Oh, Odysseus, would that this pain might run you straight through your chest! And... Ah! And you too, generals. Agamemnon. Menelaus. If only instead of me, you might nourish this sickness for as long a time. Oh, my... Ah! Death! Death! How is it that though you are called upon each day, you can never come? Son... Noble one, take me up and burn me in the fire called Lemnian. Please, as I myself agreed to do for the son of Zeus in exchange for these arms over which you now stand guard. What do you say, my friend? What do you say? Why silent? Where are you?
For some time now, I've been in pain for you, grieving over your sufferings.
But be assured that the pain comes to me suddenly and as swiftly depart. Only, I beg you, don't leave me here alone.
Don't worry. I'll stay with you.
You'll stay?
Yes, of course.
I don't think it's fitting for you to swear an oath, but...
It isn't right that I go without you.
with your hand, make a pledge.
I promise to stay with you.
There. Now. Over there.
What are you saying? Where?
Up.
What? Are you turning delirious again? Why are you looking up at the sky?
Let me go.
Well, where to?
Anywhere. Just let go of me.
I won't.
You'll destroy me if you touch me.
All right. I'm letting go of you. Now that you're thinking a bit more clearly.
Oh, Earth. Dead as I am, take me. For this agony no longer even lets me stand up.
Not yet, son of Poeas. Not until you have heard my words. It is the voice of Heracles you hear, and his face you see with your eyes. I have come here from my seat on Olympus on your behalf to tell you the plans of Zeus and to stop you from this road you are now taking. Listen to me. First, I'll remind you of my fortunes, what sufferings and agonies I endured before winning the immortal glory which you see before you. For you also know well it is fated that from these sufferings of yours your life will be made famous. Going with this man to the city of Troy, you will find an end to your grievous disease. Of the whole army, you will be declared first in valor. And with these arrows of mine, you will slay Paris, who was the cause of these troubles, and you will conquer Troy, and win the best prizes from the army, and send home the spoils to the high plain of your fatherland, Oeta, to your father, Poeas. And whatever spoils you take from this war, place on my pyre as tribute to my bow. I advise the same to you, son of Achilles. For you aren't strong enough to take Troy without him, nor he without you. But each of you must guard the other, even as two lions that feed together. Meanwhile, I shall send Asclepius to Troy to heal your disease, for once again the city is to be taken by my bow. But remember, when you conquer the land, to respect what is sacred to the gods. For Father Zeus considers all things second to this alone, for reverence does not die with mortals. Whether they live or die, it is never destroyed.
Uttering what I've longed for, you appear at last. I shall not disregard what you have said.
Nor shall I.
Then don't waste time now in preparing for action. The moment to act is upon you, and the wind at your stern.
Very well, then. In departing, I shall call upon this island. Farewell, chamber that kept watch over me. Water nymphs. Nymphs of the meadows. The muscled crashing of sea against headland were often my head, though inside the cave was drenched by the south winds beating, and often the mountain of Hermes sent back to me in answer. My own voice, echoing, groaning, as I weathered the storm. But now, O streams of Lycian spring, we take leave of you. I leave you at last, what I never expected. Farewell, Lemnos, surrounded by sea. Grant me, free of blame, a safe voyage to where great destiny itself carries me, and the judgment of my friends, and the gods who tames everything, who himself has decreed this.
Let us leave together, praying to the sea nymphs that we meet safe voyage home.
Thank you for listening. For more episodes of Literature Out Loud, please visit humanities.uci.edu www.patreon.com/ICWT.
Take me somewhere I've never been. Show me something new, I insist. Take me somewhere I've